A thousand speeding heartbeats later, he slowed at last to a ragged walk. He could not have run farther even if he had been the archdemon's quarry. He was exhausted, limping, and hungry beyond belief. His fear and confusion hung on him like a mantle of chains. The dream had frightened him so that he felt even weaker than before his sleep. Plodding forward, always with the castle at his back, he felt the memories of better times raveling away, leaving him with nothing but the thinnest of strands still tied to the world of sunlight and order and safety.
What did it feel like when I used to lie in the hayloft, in the quiet? There's nothing in my head now, only words. Did I like to be there, in the castle? Did I sleep there, run there, eat and talk and... I don't think so. I think I've always walked these downs beneath the moon. That white face. Walked and walked like the pitiful, lonely ghost of a moon calf. Walked and walked.
A sudden shiver of flame on the hilltop halted his gloomy imaginings. For some time, the ground had been sloping steadily upward, and he had nearly reached the base of shadowy Thistleborg. Its mantle of tall trees was a solid, impenetrable darkness against the obscurity of the hill itself. Now a fire bloomed along the hill's crest, a sign of life amidst the downs and damp and centuries of death. He broke into a slow trot, the most he could manage in his present condition. Perhaps it was a shepherd's campfire, a merry blaze to keep the night at bay.
Perhaps they have food. A shank of mutton, a knob of bread.
He had to lean forward. His innards twitched and cramped at the thought of eating. How long had it been? Only supper last? It was astonishing to consider.
Even if they have no food, how wonderful it will be just to hear voices. To warm myself before a fire. Oh, a fire!
A memory of hungry flames leaped before his mind's eye, bringing a different kind of hollowness. He climbed upward through the trees and tangled brush. The base of Thistleborg was ringed all around by mist, as if the hill was an island upthrust from a cobweb grey sea. As he approached the summit, he saw the blunt shapes of the anger stones crowning the final rise, etched in red relief against the sky.
More stones. Stones and more stones. What did Morgeni say this was, this night?
If it was still the same moon, the same darkness cradling the same dim stars, what did he call it? Stoning night, as though the very stones celebrated. As if while Urchester lay sleeping behind shuttered window and latched door, the stones made holiday. In his weary thoughts, Simon could see them ponderously astep, the merrymaking stones bowing and wheeling, slowly turning.
That's stupid. Your mind is wandering. And no surprise. You need food and sleep. Otherwise you'll go truly mad.
Whatever going mad meant. Angry all the time? Frightened of nothing? He had seen a mad woman in Battle Square, but she had merely clutched a bundle of rags and rocked herself to and fro, keening like a gull.
Mad beneath the moon. A mad moon calf.
He had reached the last stand of trees that surrounded the hill crown. The air was still as though expectant. Simon felt his hairs go all a prickle. It suddenly seemed a good idea to walk quietly, to have a cautious look at these night shepherds instead of crashing suddenly from the underbrush like an angry boar. He worked his way closer to the light, ducking beneath the twisted limbs of a wind-racked oak. Just above him jutted the anger stones, concentric rings of tall, storm-sculpted pillars. Now he saw a cluster of man-shapes huddled about the leaping fire at the center of the stone rings, cloaks hunched up at their shoulders. Something about them seemed stiff and uneasy, as though they waited on something expected but not necessarily desired. The windswept grass and heather there clung closely to the downsloping ground, which stretched away from the stones to sink at last out of the firelight at the hill's northern edge. Staring at the statue-still figures around the fire, Simon again felt the weight of his fear drag at him. Why did they stand so unmoving? Were they living men at all, or some eerie carvings of hill demons? One of the shapes moved to the fire and poked it with a stick. As the flames jumped, Simon saw that this one at least was a mortal man. He crawled stealthily forward, stopping just beyond the outer circle of stones. The firelight caught and reddened a momentary glimpse of metal beneath the cloak of the nearest figure. This shepherd wore a mail shirt. The vast night sky seemed to shrink down, a prisoning blanket. All the half a score of shrouded men were armored. It was the Erkingard, he was sure of it. He cursed himself bitterly. He had come straight to their fire like a moth flinging itself into the candle flame.
Why am I always such a damnable, damnable fool?
A thin night wind sprang up, setting the high flames whipping like a burning pennant. The cloaked and hooded guardsmen turned their heads in unison, slowly and almost reluctantly, gazing out into the darkness at the hill's northern rim. Then Simon heard it too. Above the hissing wind that riffled the grass and gently shook the trees, there came a faint sound, growing ever so gradually louder. The aching creak of wooden cartwheels. A bulky shape was climbing upward out of the obscurity of the north edge. The guardsmen moved away from the approach, circling the fire to cluster together on the side nearest Simon. No word had yet been uttered by any of them. Dim, pale shapes that slowly became horses appeared at the fringe of the fire glow. Following behind, growing distinct from the night, was a great black wagon. Black hooded figures walked on either side, four in all, matching the wagon's stately funeral pace. The flickering light revealed a fifth atop the wagon, hunched over the team of ice-white stallions. This last figure was somehow larger than the others and darker, as if it wore some cloak of obscurity. Its very stillness seemed to speak of a hidden, brooding power. The guards still did not move, but stood rigidly watching. Simon, transfixed, felt cold pressure in his head, a gnawing clutch in his vitals.
A dream. A bad dream. Why can't I move?
The black cart and its attendants drew to a halt just within the circle of firelight. One of the four standing figures raised an arm, the black sleeve falling away to reveal a wrist and hand as thin and white as bone. It spoke, voice silvery cold, toneless as ice cracking.
We are here to fulfill the covenant.
There was a stir among those who had been waiting. One of them stepped forward.
As are we.
Watching helplessly as this mad fancy progressed, Simon was not at all surprised to recognize the voice of Priorates. The priest pulled back his hood. Firelight traced the high arc of his forehead and emphasized the skeletal depths of his eyes.
We are here, as agreed.
Was there a faint quaver in his voice?
Have you brought that which was promised?
The bone-white arm swept back, gesturing to the looming wagon.
We have. Have you?
Priorates nodded his head. Two of the guardsmen bent and wrestled some burden up from the grass where it lay, dragging it forward to be dropped ungently at the alchemist's booted feet.
It lies here. Bring forth your master's gift.
Two of the robed figures moved to the wagon, carefully lifting down a long, dark object. As they brought it forward, one holding either end, a biting wind sprang up and whistled over the hilltop. The black robes billowed, and the hood on the nearest blew back, spilling a flurry of gleaming white hair. The face revealed in the brief moment was delicate as a mask of the thinnest, most exquisite ivory. An instant later, the hood flapped back. Who were these creatures? Witches? Ghosts? Behind the shielding rocks, Simon brought a trembling hand up to make the sign of the tree.
The white foxes. Morgani said white foxes.
Priorities, these demons or whatever they might be, it was all too much. He must still be dreaming in the graveyard. He prayed it was so and closed his eyes to block out the unholy imaginings, but the ground beneath him was pungent with the unmistakable smell of wet earth, and the fire crackled in his ears. Opening his eyes, he found the nightmare unchanged.
What is happening?
The two shadowy figures reached the edge of the fire circle. As the soldiers edged even farther away, they set their burden down and stepped back. It was a coffin, or at least coffin-shaped, but only 3 hands high. A ghastly bluish light smoldered along its edge.
Bring forth that which you have promised.
Priorates gestured and the bundle at his feet was dragged forward. When the soldiers stepped back, the alchemist pushed the object over with the toe of his boot. It was a man, gagged and bound at the wrists. Simon only slowly recognized the round, pale face of Count Breugar, the Lord Constable. The robed figure regarded Breugar's bruised features for a long interval. Its expression was hidden in the hood's shadowed folds, but when it spoke, there was a twist of anger in the clear, unearthly tones.
This does not seem to be what was promised.
Priorates tilted his body a little to the side, as if narrowing his exposure to the hooded thing.
This one allowed the promised one to escape. He will take the promised one's place.
Another figure shouldered its way out from between a pair of guardsmen, moving forward to loom at Priorates' side.
Promised? What is this promised? Who was promised?
The priest raised his hands placatingly, but his expression was stern.
Please, my king, I think you know. Please.
Elias snapped his head around to stare at his counselor.
Do I know, priest? What did you promise on my behalf?
Priorates leaned toward his master.
Lord, you bade me do what I must for this meeting. I did it. Or would have, had not this Kenneth.
He dug a toe into bound Breugar.
Failed in his duty to his sovereign.
The alchemist looked over to the dark-robed figure, whose impassivity carried, nonetheless, a hint of impatience. Priorates frowned.
Please, my king. The one we speak of is gone. The point is moot. Please.
He laid a light hand on Elias' cloaked shoulder. The king shook it off, staring out of the shadows of his hood at the priest, but saying nothing. Priorates turned to the black-robed figure once more.
This one we offer you. His blood, too, is noble. His lineage is high.
Of high lineage?
The dark thing's shoulders shook as though it laughed.
Oh, yes. That is very important. Does its family go back many generations of men?
The dark hood turned and met the shrouded gaze of its fellows.
Certainly. Hundreds of years.
Well, our master will certainly be pleased.
Priorates took a cautious step backward.
Proceed.
The priest looked to Elias, who pulled back his hood. Simon felt the looming sky crouch still closer. The king's face, pale even in the ruddy firelight, seemed to float in midair. The night swirled, and the king's impassive gaze drew light like a mirror in a torch-lit hallway. Finally, Elias nodded. Priorates stepped forward and grasped Breugar by the collar, dragging him to the coffin box, where he let him slump to the earth. The priest then unclasped his cloak, revealing a dull flare of red robe, and reached into the inner folds to withdraw a long, curved blade like a sickle. He raised it before his eyes and faced the northernmost point of the ring of stones.
To the Dark One, who is master of this world, who bestrides the northern sky, Vosir Sombris Feata Concordin, to the Black Huntsman, possessor of the icy hand, Vosir Sombris Feata Concordin, to the Storm King, the outreaching, the dweller in the stony mountain, the frozen and burning, the sleeping but awakened, Vosir Sombris Heata Concordin!
The black-robed figures swayed, all but the one atop the wagon, who sat as still as the anger stones. And a hiss went up from their midst, mingling with the new risen wind.
Hear now your supplicant! The beetle beneath your black heel, the fly between your cold fingers, the whispering dust in your endless shadow. Oiveas mea! Hear me! Dime orquelos, exultat mei! Shadow Father, let the bargain be struck!
The alchemist's hand snaked down and grasped Breugar's head. The Count, who had been lying limp at his feet, suddenly lurched forward and away, leaving the startled Priorates holding nothing but a hank of bloodied hair. Simon watched helplessly as the pop-eyed Lord Constable stumbled directly toward his hiding place.
Fools! He's getting away! Stop him! Stop him at once!
The close-leaning knight tightened around Simon, choking his breath and blackening his vision as a pair of guards leaped after Breugar. The Count was only a few paces away, running awkwardly because of his tied hands, when he tripped and fell. His legs kicked and his breath soared noisily behind the gag as the guardsmen bore down on him. Simon had risen to a half-crouch behind the concealing stone, and his weary heart was hammering as though it might rupture. He tried desperately to still his trembling legs. The guards, close enough to touch,
this bloody train,
yanked Breugar to his feet. One of them raised a sword and struck the Count with the flat of his blade.
Come on, then.
Simon could see Priorates staring out from the circle of light and the king's ashen, fascinated face beside him. Even as Breugar's limp form was wrestled back toward the fire, Priorates continued to squint at the place where the Count had fallen.
Who is there?
The voice seemed to fly on the back of the wind straight into Simon's head. Priorates was staring right at him. He must see him.
Come out wherever you are. I command you to come forward.
The black-robed figures began a strange, ominous humming, and Simon struggled against the alchemist's will. He remembered what had almost happened to him in the storeroom and braced himself against the compelling force, but he was weakened, wrung dry like a piece of cloth.
Come out.
A questing something reached out to touch his mind. He fought, trying to hold shut the doors of his soul, but the probing thing was stronger than he by far. It had only to find him, to grasp him.
If the covenant no longer suits you, then let it be broken off now. It is dangerous to leave the ritual half-spoken. Very dangerous.
It was the hooded figure speaking, and Simon could feel the Red Priest's questing thoughts shaken.
What?
Perhaps you do not understand what you are doing here. Perhaps You do not comprehend who and what is involved.
No. Yes, I do.
Simon could somehow sense the priest's nervousness as if it were an odor.
Guards, quickly! Bring that sack of offal here before me.
The guards dragged their burden back to lie again at his feet.
Pirates!
Please, Your Majesty, please. It is only a moment now.
Horribly, a part of Pirates' thought had not left Simon's mind. Some clinging tag end that the priest had not pulled back. He could almost taste the alchemist's quivering expectancy as Pirates pulled up Breugar's head, could sense the priest responding to the low murmuring of the hooded ones. And now he felt something deeper too, a chill wedge of horror driving into his raw and sensitive mind. Some inexplicable other was there in the night, a terrible something else. It hovered over the hilltop like a choking cloud and burned inside the seated figure on the wagon like a hidden black flame. It dwelt also in the bodies of the standing stones, infusing them with its greedy attention. The sickle rose. For a moment, the flashing crimson curve of the blade was a second moon against the sky, an old red crescent moon.
Hey, Thamos, it's Takia! Aye, Nakiga!
The sickle descended, and Breugar sagged forward. Purplish blood pumped from his throat, spattering down onto the coffin. For a moment, the Lord Constable twitched violently beneath the priest's hand, then went limp as an eel. The dark flow continued to drizzle on the black lid. Enmeshed in the bizarre intermixture of thought, Simon helplessly experienced Pirates' panicky exhilaration. Behind that, he felt something else, a cold, dark, horribly vast thing. Its ancient thoughts sang with obscene joy. One of the soldiers was throwing up, but for the flabby numbness that unmanned and silenced him, Simon would have done the same. Pirates pushed the Count's body aside. Breugar tumbled in a disordered heap, oyster-pale fingers curled toward the sky. The blood smoked on the dark box, and the blue light flickered more brightly. The line it described around the edge became more pronounced. Slowly, dreadfully, the lid began to open, as if forced up from within.
Holy Osiris, who loves me. Holy Osiris, who loves me. Help me. Help me. Help. It's the devil in that box. He's coming out. Help. Save me. Oh, help.
We have done it. We have done it. Too late to turn back. Too late.
The first step. How they will pay and pay and pay.
As the lid tilted up, the light within burst forth, throbbing indigo touched with smoky grey and sullen purple, a terrible bruised light that pulsed and glared. The lid fell open and the wind tightened its pitch as if frightened, as if sickened by the radiance of the long black box. At last, what was inside could be seen.
Chingizu.
It was a sword. It lay inside the box, deadly as an adder. It might have been black, but a floating sheen mottled the blackness, a crawling grey like oil on dark water.
It beats like a heart. The heart of all sorrow.
Calling, it sang inside Simon's head. A voice both horrible and beautiful, seductive as claws gently scraping his skin.
Take it, Highness!
Enthralled, helpless, Simon suddenly wished he had the strength to take it himself. Could he not? Power was singing to him, singing of the thrones of the mighty, the rapture of desire fulfilled. Elias took a dragging step forward. One by one, the soldiers around him stumbled back, turning to run, sobbing or praying down the hill, lurching into the darkness of the girdling trees. Within moments, only Elias, Priorates, and Hidden Simon remained on the hilltop with the Hooded Ones and their sword. Elias took another step. Now he stood over the box. His eyes were wide with fear. He seemed stricken by wrenching doubt, his lips working soundlessly. The unseen fingers of the wind plucked at his cloak, and the hill grasses twined about his ankles.
You must take it!
Elias stared at him as though seeing the alchemist for the first time.
Take it!
Priorates' words danced frantically through Simon's head like rats in a burning house. The king bent, reaching out his hand. Simon's lust turned to sudden horror at the wild, empty nothingness of the sword's dark song.
It's wrong! Can't he feel it? Wrong!
As Elias' hand neared the sword, the wail of the wind subsided. The four hooded figures stood motionless before the wagon. The fifth seemed to sink into deeper shadow. Elias grasped the hilt, lifting the blade out of the coffin in one smooth movement. As he held it before him, the fear was suddenly wiped from his face, and his lips parted in a helpless, idiot smile. He lifted the sword high. A blue shimmer played along the edge, marking it out from the blackness of the sky.
I will take the Master's gift. I will honor our pact.
Slowly, the blade held before him, he sank to one knee.
Hail to Inaluki, Storm King!
Simon wheeled back from the flapping, whirling hillfire as the four robed figures lifted their white arms.
No! The king! All is lost! Run, Joshua!
Sorrow! Sorrow on all the land!
The fifth hooded shape began to writhe atop the wagon. The black robe fell away, and a shape of fire crimson light was revealed, flapping like a burning sail. A ghastly, heart-gnawing fear beat outward from the thing as it began to grow before Simon's terror-fixed eyes. Bodiless and billowing, larger and larger, until the empty, wind-snapping bulk of it loomed over all, a creature of howling air and glowing redness.
The devil is here. Sorrow. His name is Sorrow. The king has brought the devil. Morghenis, holy Osiris, save me! Save me! Save me!
He ran, mindlessly down through black night, away from the red thing and the exulting something else. The sound of his flight was lost in the screaming wind. Branches tore at his arms and hair and face like claws. The icy claw of the north. The ruins of Asua. And when he fell at last, tumbling, and his spirit fled from such horror, fled away into deeper darkness, it seemed that in the final instant, he could hear the very stones of the earth moaning in their beds beneath him. The Dragonbone Chair, Part 1 of 3, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1989 by Tad Williams. Published by arrangement with Door Books. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2025, Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Peter Holdway, featuring
Stuart Crank as Simon,
Nathaniel Priestley as King Elias,
R.J. Bailey as Prince Joshua,
Wynn Delano as Prirates,
and Terence Azelford as Dr. Morghenis.
With performances by
Andy Brownstein,
Dylan Lynch,
Lise Bruno,
Jonathan David Bullock,
Chris Stinson,
James Kermacek,
Karen Novak,
Ken Jackson,
Kimberly Cochran,
Kay Alluvian,
Kimberly Gilbert,
Nick J. Russo,
Ellen Quay,
Laura C. Harris,
Drew Copas,
Stefan Walker,
Julie Hoverson,
Bradley Foster Smith,
Elias Khalil,
Alex Hill Knight,
Eric Messner,
Ryan Haugen,
Danny Gavigan,
Matthew Bassett,
Donald Guzzi,
Peter Stanley,
Michael Glenn,
John Keelty,
Danielle Cohen,
Richard Rowan, Christopher Testa,
David Alt,
Damon Allums,
John Vertula,
and Scott McCormick.
Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Robert McDonald. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Robert McDonald. Theme and original music by Robert McDonald. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. The adventure will continue in the Dragonbone Chair, Part 2 of 3, available soon in graphic audio. Keep listening for a sample of Iron Gold, Book 4 of the Red Rising Saga by New York Times best-selling author Pierce Brown.
Severo, Thraxa, and I watch via hollow from Tharsis's library as Apollonius addresses them. He looks out to his soldiers. They stand assembled on the ill-kept tarmac on the south side of his island. Tiny, azure-shelled crabs skitter between the weeds in the cracked concrete. The uniforms of the soldiers are untidy, their necks wreathed in huge shells, hair long in local braids. Apollonius spits on the ground.
I fear a dread illness has fallen upon the house of my father and mother.
He paces before them with his proud shoulders hunched, his mane tied tight to the back of his head. Tharsis stands behind him like a scolded child.
An illness that has leached the glory from our veins, the color from our banner. It was not brought by you.
He looks at his brother.
That blame lies upon the shoulders of another, but it was nurtured by you. Sustained by your torpor. I look at you, and do you know what I see?
He scans the crowd of them with wild eyes.
Do you?
The wind gusts mildly from the early morning sea, rippling their uniforms.
I see Venusians.
They shift in shame.
I see clam eaters. Men of war made into simpering sprites and disporting coxcombs. Where is the honor of your fathers and mothers? Where is the fury for your fallen brothers and sisters? The Ash Lord and his simpering allies, the Carthii, sent them to their deaths on Luna. Served us up to the Reaper like a Trimalchian feast. I watched as men and women you knew went to dark death. The Ash Lord betrayed us. It was no secret to you that I languished in the belly of the sea. No, it was known from our home world to Mercury.
He paces in venomous silence.
Yet you let me rot. You let our brothers and sisters perish. And here I find you fattening yourselves like mulling kine as if Calypso herself had besotted you with wine from her tits. Was your idleness worth the price of your shame? What would your father say? What would your mothers think?
He hangs his head, and I find myself admiring the drama of the man. He knows how to play a crowd.
I look at you, and I weep. Such shame is upon me that only Lucifer himself would know the depths of my pain. We have lost our halos, my children. Fallen from the grace of heaven through the fabled clouds and landed here in a boiling hell of debauchery and defilement while our enemies laugh at what we have let ourselves become. But all is not lost. The unconquerable will, the need for revenge, the immortal hate, and the courage never to submit or yield are strong in my heart.
He beats his chest so hard with his fist, I feel it through the hollow.
I will not rest till vengeance is mine, for I am Apollonius Al Valii Wrath, Imperator of the Minotaur Legions, Man of Mars. Iron Gold. Today, I ride forth on the wings of battle from this island prison to settle a debt and free myself from this foul affliction of shame. I ride to war, to glory. I ride for the head of the Ash Lord.
He lunges forward and lifts his razor.
I would not ride alone. So I say to you, my darkest devils, awake, arise, and reclaim your glory!
A roar answers him that chills the deeper part of me.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.